clearly today, the most important thing for our customers is affordability, reliability, and resilience. We had an 800% increase in capacity prices, auction over auction. Everybody needs to understand what's at stake.
The grid is changing faster than ever. Electrification, data centers, extreme weather, soaring demand. Duquesne Light Company may only serve two counties, but it might well be proof that innovation and impact really don't depend on size.
Not a gigantic utility, but meaningful and impactful nonetheless. I'm recognized in the supermarket and at the dentist office. You can have a really outsized impact in a very important community that is not the grid of the past, but the grid of the future. Up to $2.7 billion of investment by 2030. The fighting over like who's got to win so someone has to lose is really not going to serve anybody well.
Hey, everyone, and welcome back to Power Perspectives. I'm Kinsey Grant Baker. You know it. I know it. Your neighbor down the street probably knows it. The grid is changing faster than ever. Electrification, data centers, extreme weather, soaring demand. These are all testing every corner of the power system. But even as headlines focus on generation and capacity shortfalls, some of the biggest breakthroughs are happening on the wires. In the Pittsburgh region, one investor-owned utility is doing its best to innovate into a cleaner, healthier, and more equitable community for generations to come, and it's doing so with a distinct focus on big partnerships, big lessons, and big swings. The twist? It's not super big itself. Duquesne Light Company may only serve two counties, but it might well be proof that innovation and impact really don't depend on size. So today, I am lucky to have the president and CEO, Kevin Walker, here to explain how his team is approaching resource adequacy, reliability, and optimization. Now, prior to this role, Kevin served various executive appointments, including Senior VP of Customer and Operations Services and Nuclear Decommissioning at Southern California Edison, COO posts at Iberdrola and American Electric Power. He's a U.S. Army vet, an MBA holder, and our guest today. Kevin, welcome to Power Perspectives. How are you?
Thanks, Kinsey. Happy to be here.
Me too. I'm thrilled for our conversation. I think we're going to have some fun. I'm excited to talk about your business and learn a little bit more about your approach to all of these big head scratchers that I just teed up here. And I want to start by kind of getting the rundown on your business and operations at DLC. How many meters? What sort of capacity? What are you working with here?
Yeah, so we have 600,000 customers. Most of them are residential customers. 90% of them are. We serve two counties, as you highlighted in your opening, Beaver and Allegheny County. Pittsburgh is our metropolitan area, which is a big little city, we like to call it. 800,000 square miles, which is great. And 620,000-ish meters and 1,800 employees. So as you said, not a gigantic utility, but meaningful and impactful nonetheless.
Yeah, totally. And I think that's really going to be a central point of this conversation, that size doesn't necessarily negate impact or innovation or whatever those big buzzwords are that we want to use. Even with, 600,000 households and businesses that you're serving, that's a lot of people. That's a lot of responsibility. 800,000 square miles is a lot to manage. So I'm curious what some of the top priorities are for, you as a leader when you're thinking about customers and key stakeholders. Could you kind of give me the rundown on what really matters most to you as a utility executive today?
Yeah. And, I'll just add to your discussion around large versus small. I've worked at some very large utility companies. And while those were exciting, great opportunities. I think the impact that we can have in the visibility, the line of sight. I mean, I know most of my customers, 70% of our employees are our customers as well. I'm recognized in the supermarket and at the dentist office. And, it's kind of, you can have a really outsized impact in a very important community in the United States. So I really love the size and scale of what we're doing. And to your point, it doesn't mitigate us from, taking big swings and doing big things. So clearly, today, the most important thing for our customers is affordability, reliability, and resiliency. So starting with affordability, I mean, everybody knows the cost pressures that are going up on capacity prices. Every time we go in a rate case, we're very intentional about making sure we think about affordability for our customers and what's the value proposition, share of wallet, all these other ways to think about affordability for our customers is important. Job number one is to keep the lights on and keep the power flowing so people can enjoy their lives and livelihoods and professions. Economic development in our region is really based on that power flowing. So that's something that we spend a lot of time on. And I separated reliability and resiliency because I think about resiliency as being able to withstand like weather impacts, whether it be huge storms or wind that's coming through the area or flooding that could be mudslides. We're a very hilly area if you've been to Pittsburgh before. So all those things are really important to our customers, so therefore they're important to us.
A lot of the conversations that I have had on Power Perspectives over the last, 6 or so months have really focused on those three keywords of affordability, reliability, and resiliency. When we're talking about, affordability specifically, I'm curious what feels like it has changed the most in recent years when we're trying to figure out, the role that affordability plays in building this grid, this power system of the future. Do you feel like the conversation has shifted? And if so, how?
Yeah, I think it has shifted in the last few years, partly because just the acceleration of the affordability challenge. We used to have very predictable, very incremental changes to the cost profile for energy and quite frankly, other things in society. And therefore, people's wages and salaries could kind of keep up. I mean, think about cost of living increases, and that was about the same level of increases for, energy writ large and other things. You would get the stray kind of runaway cost somewhere, but for the most part, it was predictable and kind of in that envelope of cost and income that was growing together. Given the capacity shortfall that I mentioned and these multiple fold, we had an 800% increase in capacity prices, auction over auction. Those impacts are outpacing people's earning potential and earning capability. And so that's where it's starting to really show wear and tear from an affordability perspective.
Yeah, it certainly has become an increasingly focal part of the conversation about what the grid of the future looks like and what the utility business of the future looks like too. But I do think it's important to note that none of these things exist in a silo. None of these important key aspects of running a utility business exist in a silo. So let's talk some too about reliability and resilience. When we're speaking about grid hardening specifically, it's obviously a huge and very important part of building the future grid that we want, of investing in that future grid. If you had to describe your grid hardening efforts in maybe a word or so, what would that word be?
Yeah, I would say expansive. I mean, we have a grid that absolutely can serve our needs today. But as we forecast not too in a far distant future with, electrification, building and transportation, with, maybe reshoring some manufacturing. So you've got big load manufacturers. When you think about the way we use energy and how resilient we want it to be. So I talk about that resiliency piece. So it has to be hardened. There's a huge amount of investment that needs to go in the grid just to make sure that it can do what we need it to do as society and stimulate economic development, that my kids can get on their Game Boys and do those kinds of things. All of that ties to a grid that is not the grid of the past, but the grid of the future. And we're investing in that up to $2.7 billion of investment by 2030 to make sure we're moving the grid where it needs to be to serve our customers.
Now, let's talk about that investment specifically. Up to $2.7 billion is quite the large sum. What do you expect to be the deployment of that capital? How do you kind of expect that to play out? What are some of the top priorities for you as a strategic leader at the business?
Yeah, so think about things like using technology and integrating into our system. Dynamic line rating is a good example. And this has kind of a win-win-win solution. We can put devices on our system that will not, as the name indicates, it's dynamic. So it's taking wind speeds and temperatures and lighting and heating and other data. And it's going to give us a real-time snapshot of how much power we can push through our transmission lines. Before we had this capability, it was static line rating. So we took averages and seasonal changes, and we tried to put those in the modeling system that said how much we could put through our system. So with this dynamic, just changing to a dynamic from a static system has allowed us to push roughly 25% more energy through the same lines because it is dynamic and it's telling us real-time data that allows us to enhance without any significantly new investment, without any reconductoring or all the things that make transmission lines stable. So it's a fantastic tool, and it's tools like that we're integrating into the system. Another thing we're doing is upgrading our 4KV system It served its purpose, and it really has provided reliable and resilient power for customers. But as we think about how energy is going to be used in the future, not too distant future, when I say future, I'm talking like the 5-year horizon. We really need to upgrade that. And so we're upgrading the 4 kV to 23 kV in our system. So it's those kinds of investments that are a part and parcel of that, $2.7 billion infrastructure investment.
I think another big part of the conversation about building that grid of the future, in addition to significant investments being made in technology and grid hardening, is the conversation about just resource adequacy, generally speaking. For a utility that doesn't generate but is T&D exclusively, can you tell me a little bit about your attitude toward resource adequacy? Does not generating power give you any sort of perspective or POV on how resource adequacy plays into this grid of the future?
Yeah, we still feel a responsibility to our customers. I think the utility of the past may have said, like, okay, we're just going to stay to our knitting and only focus on the things that we have absolute control over. But we do have influence in spaces outside. And if we're really going to represent our customers and become a trusted energy partner, which is our goal for every one of our customers, we have to think about like what's impacting them and then use our influence and access to change that on behalf of customers. So, we are recognizing it. The first thing we're doing is communicating it to customers, to policymakers, to anybody who would listen that like, hey, this is a real problem that, quite frankly, in Pennsylvania, we have a really unique situation that we could actually help solve. Partly because of our natural resources, because of our energy know-how, because of our history of doing big things first, our ingenuity, our grit, our workforce, all those things are ingredients that say like, hey, we're in a kind of outside position to actually solve this issue. So the education piece is rallying people, being a convener, making sure that folks are focused on this. And then we're thinking like, what else can we do? So what we can do is think about maybe doing some long-term purchase agreements that would stimulate the building of generation. The ultimate way out of the capacity issue is to have more generation built. It's kind of the simple supply and demand. You have more supply, it meets the increasing demand, your prices come down, your reliability goes up, and then we're in kind of this nirvana place where we want to be. But stimulating that generation build, which quite frankly is challenging. I mean, it takes 5 to 7 years to build any power plant of substance. And you think about supply chain issues that we're dealing with today. You think about like not my backyard. So you get like siting and permitting issues. So there's a lot of layers to this. But we really need to get busy around that. And we want to do what we can to influence the outcome and to secure capacity rich future for our customers.
And this dual challenge of capacity shortfalls or potential capacity shortfalls with the increase in prices that is largely being driven by concerns around electrification and AI and data centers, et cetera. I would love to get your perspective on the latter part of that, especially. You mentioned an 800% increase in capacity prices auction over auction. From a leadership perspective, how does that change the way that you are thinking about the future, that future that might only be 5 or so years away, knowing that those prices are increasing, that the capacity question does not get answered tomorrow? How are you navigating through that?
Yeah, I mean, it's really just kind of one conversation at a time, convening people who matter in the equation, which is pretty much everyone. People who are paying the bills, people who are setting policy, people who are building generation, people who are managing supply chains, like everyone in the ecosystem, financial institutions that support and finance these operations, like everybody needs to understand what's at stake. And then like, what are some of the solutions that are viable? I think, I think about every tool in the tool bag. I think that's the next term that we used to use, all of the above strategy, but really every tool in the tool bag is really have to be considered. So I talked about the outside impact that Pennsylvania could have, given that we're sitting on, large gas deposits. Gas has to be a part of the equation. I'm sitting here in the backyard with a very prominent nuclear generating company. Nuclear has to be part of the solution. We also have a very prominent battery storage technology company, a couple of them in our midst. And so that batteries have to be part of the solution. So the fighting over like who's got to win so someone has to lose is really not going to serve anybody well. And then until we show up with this every tool in a tool bag approach, we're going to struggle. But once we get to that place, and I think we're convening, I see the planets aligning on this, I have to give a shout out to our governor who like intervened on the capacity markets and said, you know, negotiated a cap for 2 years that really gave us some breathing room to try to figure out how to solve this problem without having runaway costs. So shout out to him. But all of those, you know, critical players coming together and thinking about how we, you know, select all the tools in the tool bag and make sure there's a path for them to come to bear as soon as they can is what we're all about. And we have a seat at the table, even though, you know, we're a smaller size utility.
Yeah, I think Governor Josh Shapiro of Pennsylvania might be the most mentioned governor in the Energy Central daily newsletter. He is certainly like an energy wonk head, and it's certainly fun to follow the developments out of, you know, Pennsylvania in terms of policy. Now, this idea of kind of transitioning from all of the above to every tool, I like this. I like this idea. I want to kind of unravel it a little bit more. You know, you mentioned a couple specifically by name. Natural gas has to be part of the equation. Nuclear, batteries, all of these things have a role to play in building out this reliable, resilient energy grid of the future. How do you think about, you know, the pressures of reliability and resilience when you're also dealing with the pressures of decarbonization, electrification? Can you tell me a little bit more about your perspective on the clean element of clean, reliable, affordable for the energy future?
Yeah. And you know, thinking about nuclear, and I think I started there. I mean, to me, there's a great and really meaningful and impactful future for nuclear. Let's say, you know, the appetite for nuclear in the U.S. is broadened. There was a period of time where I think there were some irrational fears, some concerns about nuclear. Those have all gone away. If they ever were real, I mean, some of it's perception. And when you have things like, you know, Chernobyl and you know, some other Indian points and some of those other things that have happened. I can understand why the, you know, not expert public would be concerned about that. But, you know, in my background, I have some nuclear experience and it is super safe, super reliable, super affordable, super clean, all those things that we want in our energy sources going forward. And so it has to be part of the mix. And I feel like from small modular reactors to, you know, larger, you know, 1,000 megawatt reactors, there's a suite of solutions that could be stacked together almost in a modular basis that could be supportive. You know, wind has a role, and that's where I think some of the intermittent resources, you know, folks have said, well, you know, if they're intermittent, they really don't solve the base load problem. But once batteries get to a place where they're commercially viable and technologically viable, and I think, you know, it's very close. Again, my window is this 5-year time frame. You can put those batteries with any kind of intermittent source, and it looks like a baseload source, like always on kind of source, because the battery charges up when the wind is blowing, for instance, and when the wind's not blowing, it depletes, and then the wind starts blowing again, and so you get this closed loop cycle, and the same thing could happen with solar. So I think all of those things are just at the precipice of coming to be a part of the mix, and we have to care and feed them today to make sure that a 5-year horizon is not really turned into a 10-year horizon just because we didn't do all the things we need to do.
Yeah, the famous fusion's 30 years away and it has been for 60 years, right? This 5-year time horizon is considerably shorter.
Yeah, good example.
So I think another tool when we're talking about what's in the tool bag here for us to use to deploy, another one might be, you know, partnerships, I think, is sort of the broadest way of putting this. I would love to hear a little bit more about your perspective on, you know, tangible initiatives or partnerships that have helped you and your team most when you're trying to build for that future, both 5 years in advance and 25 years in advance. What kind of role do partnerships play in the business that you're running?
Yeah, partnerships are critical because, you know, we don't, you know, we haven't solved it all and we don't have all the answers. And the corollary, that's true. Other people have, you know, cutting edge answers to things that we could benefit from, whether it be AI and technology uses that we're integrating into serving our customers better and doing our work amongst our colleagues at Duquesne Light better, whether it be, you know, folks who are really doing some of these advanced technologies, like dynamic line rating is a good example. We partner with a company to put that on our grid. You know, even some of the softer things, you know, we're partnering with companies to help us transform our culture so that we're you know, able to fail fast and to be more nimble and to, you know, think more out of the box and open our aperture and have the art of the possibilities be broader. Because I think that if we're limited to what we've only seen in the past, it really is going to limit what we can do to solve our issues for the future. So, I mean, partnering is critical across the board. And I think partnering with our customers, you know, to go into the resiliency point, There's a whole lot that utilities can do to enhance customer resiliency, but there's some that the customer themselves can do to enhance their own resiliency. A good example is when I worked in California, you know, everybody that I knew of had a, you know, ready to go bag for, you know, think about those emergencies, those earthquakes or fires or floods or anything that was going to happen, a natural disaster. Like that was part of my resiliency plan. And I had a kit already packed. It had my critical documents in it. It had like stuff that my kids liked. They had a couple of stuffies that they would, you know, like to have with them. And we were ready to go at all times. And so thinking about our customers and saying like, yes, you know, you have outsourced this a lot to the utility and we take that seriously. But if you really want to make sure that you have, you know, 24/7 coverage and in every scenario, you have to have your own resiliency and business continuity plan. And so that goes for large customers and small customers and every customer in between.
Yeah, having the go bag. We all got to have one. You know, you use some language there, Kevin, that I think it feels singular when I'm thinking about a lot of the conversations that I have with utility leaders today. Many of those conversations have kind of focused on the key differences between what we might sort of characterize as quote unquote tech business culture versus utility business culture. You mentioned failing fast, opening the aperture. A lot of this is sort of language or parlance of an industry that's not necessarily utilities. I wonder how much of that we can chalk up to the size of Duquesne Light. You know, you serve more than 600,000 customers, two counties, including the city of Pittsburgh, obviously nothing to sneeze at, but certainly smaller than some of the, you know, the other side of the spectrum, right, of some of these power companies and IOUs we see in the news. So when we think about the size of the company you're running, I'm curious to hear, number one, what challenges it represents, and number two, what opportunities you think it represents?
Yeah, I'll start with the opportunities. You know, I would say, and you touched on it, I mean, the nimbleness and the ability to pivot fast is, I think, uniquely a smaller entity's, characteristic. I feel, having worked at larger companies and now working here, it really is something that we can explore and trial and get to a point where, hey, if this isn't working for us, we can pivot quickly, take the good and move on to the next thing. We don't have that. It doesn't take a lot of motion and inertia to get things moving. And it also doesn't take the same amount of motion and inertia to get things to stop. And so I think that's a real benefit for us. I think that, you know, because of we don't have generation, I think that people see us much more objectively in this discussion around generation. Whereas folks who have generation or potentially want generation, folks have a tendency to be, you know, think that they're biased in the way they're presenting it. And, you know, bias is one word. Another way is just like advocating for their interests. So, that's something that we don't have as a burden to us. I guess because the utility industry works so collaboratively together, we have, you know, trade associations and we share resources when anybody's in a storm. I think a lot of the, you know, what we perceive to be barriers, like, hey, maybe, you know, we don't have access to a lot of the best thinking that you would see across the enterprise. Like those things get mitigated just by the way we operate as a utility. Like we do have access to those folks. So I collaborate with my peers all the time and they collaborate with us. We go to different events together and we share best practices. We have folks deep into the organization that are collaborating with their peers across the entity. So I think enterprise, so I think we get, you know, kind of the benefits and we're able to mitigate the weaknesses of being a smaller company.
Collaboration, certainly a key theme here. Yeah. I'm curious if you have any perspective you would pass on or maybe, you know, some pathway, partnership, strategy that you are currently utilizing that you might implore maybe the leaders of major players or these bigger kinds of companies to follow in your footsteps on. Like if you could tell the leadership of like NextEra or something, yeah, one thing, I'm curious what you might pass on.
Yeah, I mean, I think that as you think about coming up with, joint wins for stakeholders, I do a stakeholder wheel all the time. I think about like all the stakeholders that, have impact or can impact a certain outcome that I'm trying to address. And then pulling all of those stakeholders into the table to come up with a common interest and common goal is something that I think is super valuable. And I think oftentimes we'll either leave out stakeholders in a desire for speed in a big company, You know, that term go slow to go fast. Oftentimes, if you miss a stakeholder, you'll regret it because later they come back to bite you in the end. They're the critical stakeholders that you missed. So I think, you know, being very purposeful and intentional about stakeholder and analysis and then bringing them to the table and creating a collective win for everybody is something that I think will serve utilities well. And quite frankly, I don't know if we've done that well, but I wouldn't just blame utilities. I mean, I think about data centers, for instance. I mean, a lot of data centers are getting a lot of pushback in communities because, you know, anything that, you know, irrational things, like people think that, you know, these things hum and make a lot of noise and they're going to, you know, have my plants die or something like that. You know, to real questions about like water usage and energy usage and what is it doing to cost of energy in that region and, you know, all those other things. And I think if those data centers would convene more of the stakeholders like upfront and then have a discussion around like, well, you know, what's a path to success for you? I think they would be more successful in winning over local and regional communities to be on their side. I mean, they're a huge tax base, so that's a positive. But what else is happening for the community that they can address that would get people on their side?
It seems like so much of managing a utility of any size today is managing the ways that people, whether that's your employees or your customers, navigate change through lots of headlines that are constantly shifting, through lots of challenges that are constantly shifting. What's your strategy there when it comes to really, you know, maintaining that steady ship when a lot of this feels kind of topsy-turvy?
Yeah, change is usually the last thing that most people, I mean, change management is usually the last thing that people think about when they're doing a big change, which is already destined to challenges there. You have to think about it as the first thing, like, okay, so what, you know, if I'm asking you to trade off the red ball for the blue ball, I've got to understand the value you have in the red ball and, you know, and then the value you would see as I'm giving you this other color ball. And if I don't recognize that, I just tell you how great this new ball is. It's going to be very hard to pry that one out of your hand that you have such a, you know, a connection to. It served you well in the past. And so I think that we in Duquesne Light, but we as an industry have to really make change management up front a real priority for our customers. I mean, you're asking our customers to do things differently and act differently, for policymakers, for our employees, particularly our employees, because we're asking them to, you know, they join this industry, depending on how long they've been around, for stability, you know, risk aversion, lack of change, you know, consistency. And we're saying, well, for to be successful in the future, we have to like turn all that stuff on its head. And you just can't say it. You have to convince people that they're going to be successful in this new model, just as they've been successful in the old model.
It's a great note to, you know, kind of round out this conversation about the challenges, because it's a wonderful point that I think is not made enough, that a lot of people who joined this industry joined a very different industry. And it's not to say that there's not a ton of opportunity and ambition and excitement in the space, but it just does look very different. You know, it looks different even from a year ago. So acknowledging that, working through that with your team is certainly core to what success will look like in the future. And with that in mind, I would love to hear your perspective on what success is to you and to your team. You know, let's say 5 years from now, which is kind of the you know, finish line we've been chatting about today. What do you hope the team does? What do you hope the industry does? What do you think will be sort of the metric for, all right, we did it. We got through this kind of crazy time in history, and now we're on the other side. Here's what we've learned.
Well, I can't believe that I've gotten through most of this conversation without talking about safety, because safety is obviously a critical paramount in our industry. And so if we can say 5 years from now that we've, you know, solved the capacity issue, we've solved the price issue, we've solved the reliability and resiliency issue, that we have workforce capable of delivering, you know, well beyond that 5 year window that we just came through, but, you know, 50 years out. So our grandkids, you know, have a stable energy platform to build upon, whatever they want to build upon, whether it's, you know, AI or quantum, you know, mechanics or whatever that thing is that's going to be the next brave world, that will be successful. And we did it in a safe environment where our customers were safe, our employees were safe, the contractors who work for us were safe. To me, that would be super successful. And I'd be very proud of my contribution to that.
Yeah. I love to hear it. Yeah. So, Kevin, we have covered a ton today, obviously getting your perspective on what leadership looks like at your utility and what the leadership lessons might be for utilities of different sizes. It has been wonderful to hear your perspective and your story. And if you're down, I would love to transition now to our lightning round. This is supposed to be quick, rapid fire. Just give me answers and a couple of questions.
If you're asking my utility CEO to be quick, boy, you're pushing
it. Hey, you're not the average utility CEO, you know?
Okay.
So we'll keep the answer short, just a couple of words here and there. I would love to start with, what is one fact about the world of utilities that you wish everybody understood better? It could be a fact, could be a reality. What do you just wish people got?
That it is super, super fun and exciting and sexy. I'll use that term because all of those things were not true when I joined 34 years ago.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's an exciting space to work in. I am very much looking forward to the next 5 years and beyond. So next question for you. If you could put your stamp of approval on one innovative clean energy advancement for the future, what would it be?
It would be small modular reactors.
All right. And finally, do you have any advice for somebody who wants to make their way to the C-suite in a utility company one day?
Yeah, I would work hard, be curious, leverage your network, wish for a little bit of luck. Because it's not, you can have all those things and still not be in the C-suite. So the luck piece has got to be in there as well.
All about increasing your surface area for luck, no matter what you want to do.
Absolutely. I like that. I'll use that.
Yeah, thank you. Kevin, it has been such an absolute pleasure to hear more about, your business, your leadership style, the challenges, the solutions, the problems, all of that today. I really, really appreciate you taking the time to stop by Power Perspectives and share all of that with us.
Thanks for having me. This was a lot of fun. I appreciate it.
Of course. And thank you to all of our listeners for tuning in. I will see you next time on Power Perspectives.